Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Join us for a journey as we go back to the great civilizations of the past. Who were the people? What were they like? How did they begin? And how did they end? Let's find out on episode 101, Northern Europe, 1000 to 500 BC. I'm so excited for this episode. I accidentally ran into one of the leading archaeologists of the era. So here we have a real scientist talking about this era. I am from Sweden. I have grown up in this area. And there were so many things in this episode I had never heard about. I hope you can share my excitement. We recorded this during the pandemic over Skype. But the content is incredible. The end of an era. The Bronze Age collapse in the Nordic countries. I had no idea about these things, and I hope you will be as fascinated as I was. Okay, I won't talk anymore. Let's do this. Welcome to Fan of History. I am Dan, a fan of history, and with me is another fan of history, Radar. Hi, Radar.
Hi, Don.
Did I pronounce your name correctly, or did I Englishify it?
No, I guess Radar is okay.
You are more than a fan of history, right? Can you tell the listeners?
Yes, I'm an archaeologist, so kind of historian.
Yes, the only kind of historian that works for our subject today, Northern Europe during the period 1000 to 600 BC? Maybe we'll mention 500 BC as well?
Possibly. Let's see.
I've talked so little about Northern Europe because there are no written sources. I mentioned the Amber Road in one episode, but that's about it, I think.
Yes, and that is, rather hard to know that much about. So... But the lack of written sources is a major problem. I understand that if you deal with history.
Should we tell the listeners how we got this idea?
We met at a birthday party.
Yes, and we started talking ancient history. And then I discovered that you knew a lot about this period.
Yes, actually it's my specialty, but for... let's say East Central Sweden mostly, but expands.
Yeah, I'll have to now you listeners got two Americans talking good English in the History in the Bible episode, but now you get two Swedes talking Swenglish instead, but you're used to that at this point. So, yes, Northern Europe.
So maybe I should begin.
Please do.
Archaeology. As there is no written sources that reliably describe any part of Northern Europe before the Roman expansions, the material for this episode of the podcast is entirely based on archaeological finds and research. History in the meaning of written sources is available in Scandinavia from around 1000 AD. in other parts of Northern Europe, maybe a few hundred years earlier. Archaeology is a social science that uses scientific methods for dating, provenance analysis, sample analysis, etc. A lot of information can be determined from human bones, and DNA techniques gives even more opportunities that presently are too costly to be used in any larger scale.
I just discovered neogenesis and the DNA techniques. I'll talk about that in another episode, but there's so much new information there. I was really surprised. When the earliest mention of Scandinavia at all is from, I looked this up right before the show, is from 25 AD, I think.
Yes, Tacitus, I think.
I think there's an earlier Polybius, perhaps.
Oh, yes, possibly, but that's it's not entirely sure that it's actually Scandinavia he mentioned.
Yeah, Dick Harrison thinks so, that's why I thought so too. But that's so late compared to the rest of the world. It's like we have these all these sources for the Middle East and then nothing for our corner of the world.
Yes, but in a way, most parts of the world have no written language at this time. So,
very true. Okay, please go on.
Well, the finds from settlement sites from this area are covered with post holes from the longhouses and some hearths and storage pits, together with some pottery bones and occasional iron tools. Graves from these periods are, for the most part, rather discreet and seldom contain gifts. Key to understand this period is likely to understand the more special sites of the period, the bronze deposits, the heaps of fire-cracked stones, and the occasional cult sites.
Do we know what these houses, the longhouses, looked like? Are they like Viking longhouses?
Very similar. It's a several thousand year long period. You have used about the same. The structure of the roof foundation is a little bit different, but from Neolithic until like end of Viking Age is basically the same, the longhouses.
Wow, so one extended family living in the same house together with a couple of animals.
Yes, but the animals come rather late, and this with the extended family contra core family is differs over time.
Okay.
Yes, and this period is like the end of the Bronze Age in this part of the world. During this period, this part of the world mostly transit between Bronze Age and the Iron Age. Traditionally, the break between Bronze Age and the Iron Age takes place around 500 BC in the Nordic Bronze Age culture, but iron have replaced bronze for cutting ages around 800 BC. In fact, that even one of the pioneers in early Swedish archaeology, Oscar Montelius, confirms that. In Britain and rest of Northern and Central Europe, for example, Hallstatt culture in Austria, the transit takes place around the same time. Ironworking have been known in these regions for several hundred years at that point. For example, the oldest evidence of ironworking in present-day Sweden are from around 1100 BC. Worth mentioning is that the oldest evidence for bronze working from the same region is just a few hundred years older.
But that's so early. I'm quite surprised. So ironworking just spread over Europe very quickly.
Yes, but it's maybe not that strange that we have rather little evidence for it, because iron is more fragile over time than bronze. So bronze is preserves better.
Ah, I see.
And this change in metalworking does correlate with the shift in the society of the time, but it's most likely not the cause of the change. And the introduction of iron does not diminish the use of bronze in most cases. It's relevant to question whether the transit from bronze to iron had any greater significance at all in a larger scale.
And that goes for the rest of the world as well, if you're not the Hittites, right?
Possibly, and I don't think that the major advantage for the Hittites were the iron, actually.
Rather the organization and...
Yes.
Yeah. But it's such a good story that they were the only ones with iron.
Yes, and the stories are important too.
That's true.
Yes, I think I should talk a little bit about settlement patterns.
Please do.
The society of the time have a strong maritime focus. All settlements were situated in the vicinity of waterways, but often not directly by the shores. Settlements were almost exclusively single household farms, with a few exceptions that are more of hamlets. One example of that is Apalle outside today's Bålsta in Sweden. That is the largest excavated settlement from this period in Scandinavia. The Lake Mälaren region was during this period a large archipelago that made it attractive for settlements, so the placement of Apalle settlement is not as odd as it first may seem. The Lake Mälaren region was the northernmost part of the Baltic area that had any large population. In the southernmost part of Scandinavia, there are more excavated examples of these hamlets, Fusi and Skanie, Spalg and Bjerg in Denmark, and there are some more known examples.
And you were basically forced to travel by water at this point, right? There were very few roads, there were a lot of forest everywhere, and you couldn't get anywhere except by water.
Yes, so the water was the key.
And you don't want to live directly by the shore because then people will find you, or...?
Yes, likely so. If you think that people lived in like single farms, you were rather exposed for like raiders.
Yeah, and there were like raiding going on.
Likely so. There, we will talk more about that later.
Yeah, I feel like these people are like proto-Vikings.
That actually the Viking Age was like the decline of something that had gone on for several thousand years.
All right.
Well, in some cases, these settlements could be situated on waterfront hilltops that later would house immigration period hill forts. In some of those settlements were also fortified during this discussed period. An example is Asve in present-day Estonia.
Wow, so fortifications already.
Yes. Oh. And there are some more examples also here in Sweden. So.
Wow.
Well, population density of maybe 5 persons per square kilometers have been suggested for North and Central Europe. And that could probably be true for present-day Denmark and Scania. But further north in Scandinavia, the density of the population is likely smaller. But even if these numbers seem small, the human impact of the landscape is extensive. Already in the late Bronze Age, which we now talk about, almost the entire of present-day Denmark was likely deforested.
Well, we knew how to destroy the environment already.
Yes. In the entire northern Europe, the dominant form of housing is the tree-aled longhouses that we talked about a little bit already. And the normal house covered an area of maybe 70 to 200 square meters. Earlier in the Bronze Age, houses were often significantly larger, but that changed around the beginning of this discussed period, 1000 BC. Presumably due to a shift in the family structure, from households consisting of large extended families to households consisting of what we do today call core families. And the smaller families are the norm during the entire period we now discuss.
That's an interesting development, that you would think that settlements would grow larger over time, but here we have the exact opposite.
Yes, it could be that it's easier to access larger portions of lands or something.
Yeah. So what about religion?
Yes. Prehistoric societies are more often than not genuinely religious. There is no way to distinguish what is religion and what is not. Everything is integrated. Almost nothing is in fact known of the North European religion of this time. But likely it was a polytheistic religion, possibly introduced already by the Indo-Europeans around 2500 BC. The few clues to the religion of the time are the burial customs, the bronze deposits and the rock art. And these we will discuss a little bit later.
How close is that? Do we know what the Indo-Europeans used, what their religion was like in 2500 BC?
We have the Veda scripts from, and it's like early Hinduism.
Yeah, but that is much later, right? And we assume that that is sort of basic Indo-European religion.
Well, it's actually not that much later, so it's it's very early writings.
Oh.
Mm. Well, it's all relative, like 700 years.
Yeah.
Well, in many cases, the most obvious sign of religion we find in archaeology are the burials. And obviously that gives a very biased view on how the religion looked like. Burial customs are, however, an important part of most religion, as it's a major rite of passage. In that way, you could tell with relatively good certainty that this area had the same religion during this time. The burial custom in Northern Europe during 1000 to 600 BC show a strong influence from that Indo-European impact, and could be seen close to the ones used in present-day Hinduism, according to some scientists anyway. The dead body is divided into the four elements, fire and air through the cremation, earth through a partial burial of the bones, and water as some of the bones are deposited in the body of water. The last part is the hardest to prove with archaeology. In the burials from this period, you never find all the bones from a cremation, as it's just a portion of that buried.
Yeah, so even if the water level has been lowered by the passage of time, the bones in the water are still scattered.
Yes, and probably the water will dissolve the bones over time.
All right.
The bronze deposits in wetlands during the turn of an era that we will talk about later seems to be divine offerings, but it could also be interpreted as hidden treasures during troubled times. It's hard to tell.
Yeah.
Finally, it's rather likely that parts of or all of the stories or messages that the rock art depicts are often what we would consider a religious nature. Stories about why the sun crossed the sky, what happened when you die, and where we all came from. The static motif of these rock arts indicate that these stories were the same over at least the entire southern Scandinavia for a period of more than 500 years.
Wow, you really don't think about rock art when you discuss this period. That seems like something that would be much earlier.
Yes. The rock art is mostly earlier period, but it still exists, but it's on decline. We will discuss that a little bit further later.
Great.
And now to one of my specialties, the economy of the time.
Ooh.
As previously mentioned, the society consists of single household farms. Pastoralism is the major part of the economy, both by growing crops and gathering. During this period, farms developed towards a more sedentary use of the landscape, with cultivated fields and permanent pastures. The animal holds are cattle, goat or sheep and pigs. The major crop is barley. Surprisingly few evidence for hunting are found in the archaeological records. Fishing seems to have been a surprisingly small part of the economy during this period, as the society had such a strong maritime focus. Analysis of human bones can determine if an individual had a large part of fish in the diet, and few analyzed individuals from this period eat fish at all, even if they lived on islands. The staple food for the largest part of the population was likely barley porridge.
Wow, that is so surprising.
Yes.
Because the waters must have been teeming with fish. There's still so much fish in the Scandinavian waters.
Yes. But maybe it felt a little bit inaccessible. I don't know.
Or maybe it was something religious.
Yes. It could possibly be.
But you mean not so much hunting either. The moose must have been happy as well.
Yes, and that could also be a false interpretation, as you don't find any moose bones. But it could also be that the moose are hunted in the forest and process the meat in the forest.
I see.
So it's not certain that that is the correct interpretation of the bone materials.
And this must be a very common situation in archaeology. You have to interpret correctly as well, and sort of not give in to tunnel vision and, oh, these things confirm my hypothesis, therefore they are true.
Yes. So the best thing you could have is no hypothesis at all.
Yeah.
In some way or another, some forms of goods must be traded for the tin and copper, as all raw materials for the bronze working are imported. Amber and fur have been suggested. However, there are several problems with those suggestions. Amber is really not found in abundance in Baltic, except for on the shores of the present-day Latvia and Lithuania. And that region have far less finds of bronzes from this period than, for example, Denmark. A possibility is that the gathering of the Baltic amber was controlled by people from the region with the most bronzes found, in other words, Denmark. Or that another closer amber source have run out. Denmark have several places where you know could find occasional amber finds after a day of hard wind.
Ooh.
So it's not that easy to just say it was amber.
Interesting. Are there any other hypotheses for except amber and fur?
Well, probably. I would possibly slaves.
Oh, I was thinking of slaves.
But it's possibly you can have more. When you can analyze bones in a larger scale, you could maybe find evidence for such things. Yes. Baltic amber was found among the treasures in the tomb of Tutankhamun from 1323 BC. The other suggestion, fur, is somewhat more plausible, though. The reason for a few or none bones from wild animals are found on the settlements dated to this period could simply be that I mentioned previously, that you process the animals in the forest. So in that way, no waste of bone material comes to the settlements. Then we can maybe should discuss what is mostly associated with the Bronze Age.
Yes, well, bronze is not easy to make. You need ingredients.
Yes, so bronze casting then. As we mentioned bronze casting earlier, we should maybe cover it a little bit further. Yes, and the bronze casting have been taking place in Northern Europe from around 2000 BC, but it's not until 700 years later, in 1300 BC, that bronze casting becomes more common. And from that time, bronze casting continue roughly for around 1000 years until it decreased, but never vanished in the pre-Roman Iron Age. As mentioned, all raw materials are imported. The copper comes mainly from Mediterranean. It's Sardinia, southern Iberia, Cyprus and southern Tyrol. The provenance of the copper is possible to determine by lead isotope analysis. The sources of the tin is less studied, but strong indications show that most come from Cornwall. The Bronze Age collapse around 1200 BC seems to not have affected this trade in any major way. A likely important trading port for these metals during the here discussed period is the island Thanet in the outlet of Thames, England. The origin of the metal was of maybe not that much importance, as it likely travelled through several middlemen.
It's still so fascinating that these are very remote parts of Europe if you are in Scandinavia, and the stuff still makes its way to Scandinavia.
Yes, and it's rather surprisingly common also, especially in the Lake Mälaren region, like Stockholm area.
Yeah.
Evidence of bronze casting are found on 30 to 40% of the examined settlements from this period.
Wow!
Mm. Bronze casting tradition seems to continue to develop and thrive through this period, especially in present-day Denmark. The bronze casting tradition there reach unparalleled levels. You could not find this level of bronze casting anywhere else in the world.
Wow!
And that with all imported raw materials.
How are they so good at bronze casting?
Well, maybe Well, that's a subject to itself, but maybe the periphery is a good thing in this matter, in this way.
Yeah. How do you tell the differences between good and very good bronze casting?
I would say it's mostly due to the technical skill required.
All right.
Well, and now to what you mentioned earlier that you did not really think about when talking about this period, the rock art.
Yeah, it's sort of sad to think about that we were still doing rock art while the Assyrians were building an empire.
But anyway, it's an art, so yeah. It's a good thing, maybe. But the practice is on its decline during this period, both in number of carving and the artistic level. As there are several carvings that naturally depicting objects that are actually found in the archaeological material, as swords, axes, oxide ingots of copper, etc., you can assume that it can be depict other objects that actually existed as well, in that way helping the archaeology. For example, the boats. That is a very common motif, the most common motif, I would say. No larger boats than tree trunks, canoes, have been found from the North European Bronze Age, but from the pre-Roman Iron Age there is a boat found in present-day Denmark that is very similar to the boats of the rock art. Jordsbringsbåten, as it's called, was constructed of skin on a frame of tree. It was 19 meters long and could carry a crew of 24 with gear. Presumably, it was a military vessel based on the finds made with the boat.
So it's like a giant canoe, Viking ship?
Yes. But probably not that seaworthy as the Viking boats.
Okay, so you wouldn't go to, like, Britain with it?
Possibly if you stick to the coastal.
Would larger boats survive for 3,000 years in Scandinavia?
Probably not. So this is like an exception.
How old is Jordsbringsbåten?
It's from 350 BC approximately.
Wow, 19 meters. That's a big ship.
Yes. So, and 24 men. It's a rather large military group of military.
Yeah.
During this period, I would say.
I would agree.
Some things that are rather interesting with the rock art in Scandinavia is that it's similar to rock art in the areas where the copper come from, like southern Iberia and Po Valley in Italy.
Mm-hmm.
So you can in that way also see a connection. And something that is very fascinating about the rock art that actually we don't know if it had to do with this period at all is the peculiar carvings in Slebro, Nyköping in eastern Sweden that have no resemblance elsewhere in Scandinavia, but possibly it's have its counterpart in Santa Monica in Po Valley. It could maybe be a kind of a map or a depiction of houses and farmlands or something, but we don't know the datings of these carvings.
How do you date rock art?
Mostly you can like exclude when they should have been underwater.
Oh.
But in the other direction, I actually not sure.
There is an important thing to know about Scandinavia as different to the Middle East, that we have a big land rise from the Ice Age. So all the ground that was pressed down by 3 kilometers of ice is rising still. I think it's several centimeters per year still.
So it's...
That can be. I don't know how big it is. It's still happening.
Yes, I think it's 7 millimeters a year.
Wow. Okay, so Stockholm, for example, is a very new place because it was all covered by water just a couple of thousand years back.
Yes, so in that way you can rule out periods when something should have been underwater. So in that way you can date it.
So you can't, like, date the paint or something? because it's just carvings and you don't have paint.
Yes, it's just carvings, and actually it's more like they knock in.
Yeah.
It's not that they carve, actually. It's more like they pounce.
Ah. I can't let go of the fact that the rock art is similar to Southern Iberia and the Po Valley. That's not something that comes with, if you have a lot of middlemen transferring the copper and the tin. But this cultural influence seems like people are actually moving.
Yes, it could be.
And this trade was not disturbed at all by the Bronze Age collapse.
No, not in a way that you can see in the material anyway.
Interesting.
Well, now we should come to discuss something that is you have had rather much about earlier in the narrative. violence.
Yes, I bet there is violence in Scandinavia as well.
Yes.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Yes, it seems like violence is an inherent part of human life.
The difference is that they did not preserve their boosting on stone like the Assyrians.
Well, possibly they could have in the rock art.
Oh.
Some of the scenes seems to be, could be something like that.
Amazing.
Well, so there is evidence of this in the northern part of Europe as well. And now we will go back a little bit before the here discussed period. We go back to the Bronze Age collapse, actually.
Okay.
In Tollens in northern Germany, a major battle took place around the year of the Bronze Age collapse in the, 1200 BC. It seems that whatever happened also affected this part of Europe during the Bronze Age collapse. It's rather well examined. In Tollens in northern Europe, a major battle took place around the year of the Bronze Age collapse, around 1200 BC. The battle seems to have stood between professional soldiers with good and well-used equipment and healed old battle wounds that you can see on the bones. The total amounts of fighters were around 4,000 to 5,000. Several hundred of them were left dead on the battlefield around what at that time was a swampy river crossing. So far, the genetic examination of the origin of the combatants are conclusive, but the size of the group shows that there must have been some kind of power to piece together such a large forces, likely some kind of chieftain or small kings.
This is an amazing mystery. Who were these guys? And I talked about battles after, when the world returns in the Iron Age in the Mediterranean, but 4,000 to 5,000 fighters, that's a lot, even for, yes, for the Bronze Age, right? In the Middle East.
I would say so.
I remember the first issue of Cambridge Ancient History has pre-Bronze Age collapse stuff, and that's they're still fighting in Palestine, of course, but the armies are 100 guys on one side, except for the Battle of Kadesh.
Mm.
Oh, please go on.
Yes. Well, nothing is known of the political structure of the time, but some kind of ruler must have existed. And that power was likely individually based and rested solely on one person's ambition and connection. An example is the rich burial in Håga outside Uppsala in Lake Mälaren region in Sweden. It's dated to around 1000 BC, but there is no equal finds in wells in a grave for the entire Scandinavian Bronze Age. But in Håga, there is just that one mound. So the power was likely either short-lived or there were no need to display power for further generation, as that one mound was all it took to show the might of the ancestors. Even if the mound hold a bronze sword, this was one of about 10 found in Mälaren region of Sweden from the entire Bronze Age. That showed that this typically military weapon, as a sword is, was not at all common here, especially if you compare to the thousands of bronze swords from the same period found in present-day Denmark. However, a common tool, as a bronze socket axe, works well as a weapon if you don't have a sword available. The finds of a murdered man in a bog from around 800 BC confirms that. This extensively researched man was killed with several hits of a socketed axe. He is called Granhammarsmannen and he was from eastern Scania but died in Mälaren archipelago, east central Sweden. He was around 50 when he was murdered and he had made a living out of leatherworking, which could be determined as he brought his tool with him when he sank to the bottom.
This seems like a subject for one of my murder podcasts. An unsolved murder. It's a pretty cold case at this point.
Ah, yes. Probably one of the coldest.
What about spears?
Yes, there are a few spears also, but they are rather uncommon also. But the socketed axes are, well, not common, but you find them here in Scandinavia. But it seems to have been more fighting further south you get.
Okay, do they have shields?
Yes, there have been found bronze shields in western Sweden. There was a large collection of them. I don't remember the number, but there are found bronze shields in Sweden too, but not that common.
What about a bow and arrow?
Probably rather common, I would say, but not. They are rather poorly preserved mostly, and the arrow tips are so small.
Oh, okay.
But in northern, now we're probably losing the subject here, but from Neolithics you have the oldest find of a composite longbow in the world.
Wow.
In northern Uppland.
How old?
It's like 5,000 years or something.
Amazing. I'm thinking that swords were not that common in actual fighting in the Mediterranean either, or in the Middle East. It seems like the Assyrians just used them for executions, and most of the fighting is done by spears or arrows.
Yes. I assume that actually the most effective military weapon is bow and arrow.
How durable is a bronze sword? Can you, like, fight like a knight or a Viking with a bronze sword? Or does it break?
I think they need some kind of experimental archaeology there.
All right.
I'm not sure if it's tested.
Okay.
But I assume that they are, like, actually an iron sword is rather fragile also. You have to unbend it often.
Okay.
So it's, I'm not sure actually.
So maybe swords were just poor in real battle at this point.
Yes.
But your axe was trusty and you knew how to use it.
Yes, and probably lighter too.
Ah.
So you can attack faster.
This next part is my favorite. I had no idea about this.
Yes, and this is, well, a little bit less known also, I would say. And I would call it the turn of an era, actually. Around 800 to 750 BC, something major happened in northern Europe. There is a slight change in the climate toward a colder, wetter climate, but that was likely not the major reason. This colder and wetter climate was still warmer than we see today, so no big deal, I would say. But whatever happened, it took two generations. Either the population decreased significantly or they changed the way they lived, so it left less traces in the records. As traces of human decrease in the entire northern Europe, from Sweden, we can see that from the results of the carbon dating of archaeological finds. The number of datings to 750 BC are, and following years for centuries are half as many as for 800 BC. The same level as 800 BC is not reached up until 400 BC in most region.
So maybe I was... It takes 400 years to recover from this, whatever it was?
Yes.
It sounds like the Bronze Age collapse.
Yes, but 400 years later. But it could also be that they changed the way of life rather drastically, and we could not find what they were doing. It's also a possibility.
Interesting.
Yes. Further, we can also see a discontinuing of the settlements that have been inhabited for centuries. For example, the previously mentioned Apale. One thing that do increase here is the amount of deposits of bronzes and other precious metals in wetlands. Likely some kind of offerings, maybe. And as mentioned previously, also around this time, iron become more common. There is still research needed to determine why this shift occur, and if it actually occur, it could also be a shift in lifestyle. But my personal suggestion would be that it's some kind of famine or plague.
But it must be a terrible event that did not affect the Mediterranean world, as far as we know. Because this is the age of recovery for the Mediterranean and the Middle East, right?
Yes. So... it's something that is different here.
So either everyone turned into living in harmony with the forest, except for making iron, or they were hit by a huge disaster, or we don't have any traces of a war or destruction. The settlements are just abandoned.
Several settlements are abandoned. It's rather few that actually have a continuation over this... 800 BC.
Oh, that is a great mystery. The turn of an era, the Nordic Bronze Age collapse.
Well, you can see it that way also, but we should not over-dramatize it.
How did I not know about this? Okay, sorry for over-dramatizing it. Wow.
Well, how much did you actually know about Swedish Bronze Age before this? At all.
Very little. I think I actually know more about the sort of arrival of the Indo-Europeans and stuff that happened before this. And of course the Viking Age, but...
Yes, so it's not maybe that strange that this is nothing most people have not heard about.
I'm so happy it just happened to be the era we covered in Fano history, so we could do this.
I'm happy to provide. Well, as you can see, this part of Europe is a rather sparsely populated periphery, but it not necessarily make it much less developed. The reason we know much more about the Middle East, I would say, is the written sources and the much more numerous constructions of stones and bricks.
Yeah, and I think the Nordic climate is very unforgiving to a lot of things. That it's good if you can put big stone monuments in the dry desert where they just stand around for thousands of years.
Yes, but here you would likely prefer to build in tree that keep the heat better.
Yeah, and we have so much wood here, so turning to stone is not necessary.
Oh.
I'm so interested in this world that seems so unknown to us still.
Yes, it's rather interesting to work with, as you say, we have brought a few pieces of the puzzle, but maybe you can find some more pieces and maybe build something off it, but still Bronze Age is rather unknown to us.
How much work is being done on this these times?
In last years there have been some doctoral theses around Bronze Age, but have not maybe suited my taste that much, but actually last year or the year before that, there were a really good one regarding this with the bronze working. That one I liked rather much.
Yeah.
Anna Sörman. Yes. So it's there is new research that is really good also.
Are there any information in English that we could share with the listeners about this? Like any useful links or something we can put in the show notes?
Not that I could think about now. Unfortunately, most of the research is written in Swedish.
Of course. Or Norwegian or Danish, I presume.
Yes, the Danish doesn't help me much either. I see the problem with it, but I feel myself that I have written only one article ever in English. So I feel that it's so much more work than written in Swedish.
Oh, maybe I should offer my services for the Swedish archaeologist. So now Fan of History is one of the better sources in English for the Nordic Bronze Age.
hopefully not.
Hopefully not. Good answer. Anything else you would like to tell the listeners?
Well, I guess I will come up with that when I go to bed tonight.
Probably.
But that would be too late.
I am so happy we got to do this. This is like what I wanted for 5 years, to hear about the Nordic for this age.
Mm.
You delivered very well.
I'm happy to do that. There is of course more, but I think I made a brief summary that could fit the time frame rather well.
Yeah, this is an introduction to the Nordic area. And if you want to hear more about it, tell me so I can try to beg Radar to come back. Thank you very much, Radar.
Thank you, Dan, for having me.
If you enjoyed this podcast, please consider supporting us on Patreon, patreon.com/fanofhistory. Just $1 an episode would help us out. Thanks, and see you next time.